This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web on 10radio.org.
10 Radio.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Somerset is go!
And welcome once again to Somerset Is Go. It's the programme designed to help you through the recession by highlighting Somerset's success stories in the world of business and by seeing how others have found ways to survive in difficult times. Now, election fever may well be in the air, but it's been a bank holiday weekend, so it seemed quite a good idea for Somerset Is Go to have an away day as well and see how the holiday industry is coping with the current recession. Now, I'll be visiting a self-sustaining and self-financing information centre that's become a benchmark in good practice the world over. I'll be talking to someone who's bucking the trend by opening a new luxury hotel at the height of the recession. And finally, I'll be returning to an internationally famous Somerset business to learn why they still operate from a sleepy Somerset village. So let me take you first to a very busy place full of hustle and bustle and a little over 1 hour's drive from Wiveliscombe. It's tradition on a bank holiday to go somewhere, and as you might expect, because it's bank holiday, I'm not in Wiveliscombe. I'm a little bit further away than that, down in Kingsbridge, which is one of my favourite places. And if you come down to Kingsbridge, you want to know what you're going to do and how you're going to spend your time. So the best thing to do is to come into the Kingsbridge Information Centre. And I'm going to talk now to Amanda Bloomer, who's the manager of the centre. Amanda, you very specifically said the Kingsbridge Information Centre and not the Tourist Information Centre. There's got to be a reason for this.
Very specifically, we were started 28 years ago as the very first self-financing independent information centre. We are entirely separate and apart from the tourist establishment of Visit Britain, etc., which means essentially we can set our own rules. It also enables us to take part in activities which are traditional tourist information centre wouldn't participate. For example, the majority of our work is, you know, very much about an holistic approach to community engagement and community support. 42% of the work that we do is non-income generating community outreach facilities that we provide for the local community. We are not seasonal. We are open 6 days a week in the summer, six days a week in the winter, but literally 52 weeks of the year, because we are here as much for the resident population and the local business sector as we are for our visitors. And our visitors are not just holiday makers, they are the day visitors who perhaps have only driven for 20 minutes to come to us, but they are just as important and just as welcome.
You mentioned that the centre is self-financing. How do you do this?
By a variety of reasons, and I'll be honest, it's a struggle. Our primary sources of income are our advertising revenue from our guides. We produce three a year, the accommodation, the area guide and the where to eat. And collectively, between those, we put out 80,000 guides a year. And we literally just limp from one printing to the next. Every inch of space in our windows we sell, apart from the community windows, which we do not sell. They are available on a revolving basis all year round for local community groups to use free of charge. We sell books, we sell maps, we sell literally anything that we can that will bring us in some money, but we are also mindful that we are a service facility, so it's a constant balancing act between what we can do for free and what we can provide at no charge, and where we can sensibly secure an income stream to keep us going, because if we go, there is no one else providing the facilities we do.
In these difficult financial times, can you see problems with the financing of the centre?
To be honest with you, it's always been a problem because we are literally standing on our own 2 feet. But we are very conscious that you need to adapt to changing situations and you need to adopt new policies that will make sure that you are sustainable. I don't advocate that you just change for the sake of it, but where we can move forward, embrace new technology, look at new ways of helping our businesses, then that's what we will do. We are actually an exemplar of sustainability because we're one of the few information centres that have managed to survive in these difficult times. We get people come from all over the country to talk to us to say, how do you do it? And that's been more critical latterly because, of course, tourism funding is no longer a statutory duty for local authority under the sort of central government directives. And I have to be honest with you, when we talk to them, the majority of them do go away shaking their heads because it's almost impossible to make the transition from being fully supported by a local authority to being entirely self-financing. We succeed because we started off that way. We've never been reliant on grants, we've never been reliant on funding which can be withdrawn at a moment's notice. We've literally done it on our own 2 feet from the beginning. And funnily enough, only 2 weeks ago, we had a ecotourism officer visit us from New South Wales in Australia who was looking at sustainability practices around the world. She'd won an international tourism fellowship. She was visiting England, Greece and Hong Kong, and she asked, because she runs a visitor information centre herself over there supporting the 12 Apostles on the Great Ocean Roads, which is the second biggest tourist attraction in Australia after Ayers Rock. She asked to visit a sustainable information centre, and she was directed in our path. I spent a wonderful day and evening with her, and we looked at sustainability in its widest sense, the sustainable business model, sustainable communities, sustainable community projects, sustainable funding, sustainable practices. We covered everything from recycling through to climate change to, you know, projects for the built environment, literally anything and everything. And she could not get over the fact that from our, as I always call it, our little hut on the square and the size of the operation that we run, we were self-sustaining because their site has 1.3 million visitors a year. They have sales of 1.5 million Australian dollars a year, and yet they still require 200,000 Australian dollars a year local authority funding. They are hoping one day, and I have no doubt, because she was the most amazing lady, to be cost neutral. The chances of them ever being profit generating would be a very long way off. And she, it was a real eye-opener to her to see that we actually are profit generating. We run as a not-for-profit organisation, so profits we make, we plough back into the community by supporting community projects. We make gifts to the town, we support local organisations, we undertake major infrastructure projects to support the community. For 17 years we ran the Kingsbridge Christmas extravaganza at the end of November, which was an opportunity to kickstart the Christmas trading and switch the Christmas lights on. You know, traditionally a quiet time for our accommodation providers. That came to an end for a variety of reasons, and that was when we looked around for something else that we could do that would extend the seasonality, and we decided to go for the Walkers of Welcome accreditation. We became the first town in the southwest at that time, and still the first town in Devon to actually have that accreditation, of which we are enormously proud.
I have to mention that when I first walked in here and said I was from Wibberliscombe, you said, ah, we have a link, Walkers are Welcome. I know somebody in Wibberliscombe called Anne Scotter, so you have links with Wibberliscombe. The Walkers are Welcome scheme, how long has that been going?
We have secured accreditation in June last year, and we had our official launch in October. We deliberately delayed it because, as I just said, part of the reason was to bring people out of the main season, so there wasn't much point having a launch in June just at the start of the main season. It was was a hugely successful launch. We've got an ongoing programme of events. We deliberately set it up. Although we got the accreditation here from the Information Centre, it is for the town, it is for the community, and we have a totally holistic view about our programme of events. It isn't about having a walking festival, it's about so much more. And we set up a steering group with a lot of community engagement. We now have project champions who run each of the projects. They create their own community team around them. It's a bit like the leader approach that we adopted. We provide the infrastructure and the admin support for the group through the Information Centre, but it's really important that it's now gone out and the community has seized ownership of it. It's not run by us. I still sit as the programme manager, so that we're there, and my role is to try and secure funding for some of the projects. But we have everything from an arts trail, an art installation trail, to contributing things to the South Devon AOMB Walking Festival. We're working with the local volunteer-run museum to create new trails, a history of Kingsbridge. We have wonderful programmes that are looking at creating a Walk as a Welcome food brand, so that people can order ahead when they're walking the South West Coast Path and pick up local produce. We're working with farmers markets. We are looking at long distance trails, linking the Moor with the coast. We also have a really exciting project which is designed to take non-walkers from being exactly that, non-walkers, to being competent, confident, independent walkers. And we're ultimately hoping that we can develop that so that it becomes an MVQ accredited course that we can roll out across the country with all Walkers of Welcome towns who wish to participate in it.
The obvious thing that is coming out of all of this is that you are taking every opportunity and every opening in order to develop what you do. And the other thing that comes forward from this is that you are not just an information centre, but you are a catalyst in the area for business links with tourism, with everything else. And what you're doing is actually making the very most of the assets that you have in the area.
Absolutely, and it has to be that way. We have the most fantastic position, obviously, where we are, but we are very much a community hub. We work very closely with, but are completely independent of, the town council, the district council, the county council. We work with the Chamber of Commerce, so therefore we're utterly embedded with the business and trade communities. We sit on a number of local community action groups, so that we are involved with that. One of the things that is really critical for you is creating linkages, so that as many people as possible work together. Because the last thing you want is two events happening on the same day, so you get audience dilution. You actually need to put people together. And fortunately, we have a unique role here in that we can actually create those bridges. So I actually sit on 21 different committees, because that means I know what's going on in the town. It's not because I'm the sort of person that needs to be on everybody's committee, but it does mean that when I'm sitting at somebody's committee meeting, I can say, oh, actually, they're doing this, and that would work really well with that. Did you know about so-and-so? And I can just create those linkages. It may be that some of them I'll only sit on for perhaps 12 months and then fall away, because once the bridges are established, they don't need me any longer. You know, we're not about putting our flag over everything. It's about literally supporting as many aspects of the community as we can, as widely as possible, because that's what makes a vibrant community, a community that works together. And I have to say, I moved down here in 2001 and I was just blown away by how lively, how active, how responsive, how supportive, and how innovative this whole community is. We have a wonderful atmosphere down here, and I'm actually delighted that I can play a role in it.
So you're acting as facilitators for the community in general. This reminds me of my time with VSO. I did VSO abroad, and the purpose of VSO is to make yourself redundant, effectively. You set the ball rolling, you put the necessary mechanisms in place, you make the links, and the thing will then run itself. and you can quietly walk away from it. This is exactly what you're doing.
It is. The one thing that we'll never make redundant is the information centre. I do assure you we're planning on being here for the next 30 years. But no, you're absolutely right. That is how we see our role. And if we were a traditional tourist information centre, we wouldn't be able to be so engaged in the community. We couldn't have that role because we would have a very clearly defined remit, and it wouldn't enable us to do that. And the other thing that is particular to not just this area but to areas like this is that the majority of the accommodation stock is not graded, not because it isn't good enough to be graded, but because many of them are small operators and they simply can't justify the cost involved. They wouldn't recoup it. Now, many of the national structures like Visit Britain, etc., will require you to be graded if you're going to have a route to market through them, on their websites, through their guides. So long as we are independent, we can ensure that we can still provide that support to the non-graded accommodation, because we cannot be told by anybody, you can't promote them. We operate our own rules, basically, so long as you are offering the service and the standard we are comfortable to market for you, that's fine.
You keep emphasising that the information centre is independent. Being independent means that you're not tied into other people's views, other people's ideas, and you're free to act in your own right.
Yes, we are, and that's what makes us special. We are completely impartial. We have no hidden agenda. We have no political allegiances. We have no political interference. That does mean that we can undertake roles for the community on a totally impartial basis, so that we can seem to be a facilitator rather than pushing our own points of view. That's why the relationship we have with our town council is so good, because we do work together. They acknowledge that there are occasions when, frankly, we can get things done that they can't. Equally, there are occasions that we know it's important that we have their blessing, if you will, for what we're doing, so that we're not seen to be operating unilaterally in a way that may not be in common interest or for common good. Fortunately, we do have this excellent relationship with them, and it's something that is growing stronger all the time. But we are both, that's the town council and ourselves, absolutely adamant that the reason why it works is because we are independent.
I recently went to a regional conference in Taunton on localism, and this is devolving power at local level to local people about local issues. It seems to me this is the perfect example of that.
It is, and it's interesting that so many things are happening in that way. I mean, for example, we were one of the founder members of the South Devon Coastal Local Action Group, which was successful in bringing £1.8 million worth of rural development funding to the area, and we were very conscious as a group that it needed to be at grassroots level. It's local decisions by local people on local projects. It is not people sitting 200 miles away deciding what we need done to us. It is literally what we know on the ground needs supporting. And sometimes it's not major projects, it's not major amounts of funding, it's a small amount that's needed to kickstart something, pump prime it, or even be the final piece in the jigsaw. And we felt that it was something that was really important that we should be involved with, and we provided a great deal of support for the group, with premises, with infrastructure support, and we will carry on supporting that group because we feel it's absolutely essential that local people have a say in the way their area is run, is managed, the future, and the opportunities that are explored.
We are frequent visitors to Kingsbridge. Our family has been coming here for years and years. We have always been struck by the feel of the town as a place with a purpose. You come here and you can sense that it knows what it is and where it's going. And I do find this unusual in many a town. I think your geographical isolation must help in this. You're not overshadowed by Plymouth or by Exeter. But there is always this feeling of a place that knows where it's going.
Yes, I would agree totally. There are other towns that are known for very specific things. I would like to think that apart from all of the first that we have here at the Information Centre, we were the first Green Tourism Gold Information Centre. So we've got an awful lot of sort of first behind us, and as I say, first walkers are welcome down. But the most important thing to me that Kingsbridge could be remembered for, known for, praised for, is that we are a true living community.
That I would most definitely agree with. I want to raise another point now. You mentioned that the whole information centre is self-supporting. Is everybody a volunteer or are there paid staff?
No. We have a team of five of us who work here. We are all paid. But I must say that the most important part of our whole team are the three men who founded us 28 years ago. Three local businessmen, Peter Bettridge, Neil Girling and Alan Welsh. They have stood behind us from day one. The basis upon which they do that is wholly philanthropic. They put nothing in, but they take nothing out. Even down to if they take an advert in our area guide, they pay exactly the same rate as every other advertiser. They are literally completely altruistic. I don't think the community realises just how much time and effort and support they put into keeping this facility going. It has been tremendous over the years. It really has. In January 2009, we were joined by a fourth member who joined the three men to help take it forward. That's a local hotelier, William Ireland from the Cottage Hotel, and between them we have a really secure base. We have the security. Yes, we don't have the security of knowing that whether we take any money, whether we deliver a service, whether we do our job properly, we'll still get paid at the end of the month, because that's how local authorities work. We get paid by results, and we have to deliver that level of professionalism, that degree of service that brings those results, that ensure people will advertise us, that people will come in, that they will put money in our till, and that's how we get paid. But we know those men are behind us 100% of the way. If ever we had a problem, they would step in. We as a team, the five of us here, our role is to make sure that we never have to ask them to do that.
It's interesting that you say you pay the whole team. In my mind, this has a number of advantages. If people are paid for what they do, you do have definite guidelines, you do have definite accountability trails through the centre, and you can actually put things right when they happen. If you're totally staffed by volunteers, it can be remarkably difficult to implement procedures if they do need to be implemented.
Yes, I mean, I do not in any way diminish the importance of volunteers. They are hugely critical, and so much would not happen in our community without volunteers. But I think it's important that if people come in here and they are expecting a professional level of service, they expect to know that what information we give is 100% accurate, that they can rely upon our integrity. I think it's important that our team are paid, not volunteers. We're not, I hasten to add, paid at anything like local authority rates. I do assure you, we do it more for love than we do for money. But I'm really, really proud of what we do here. I have only been the manager for the last couple of years, and so I am only inheriting the work and the effort and the goodwill that's been built up over the previous years before me. And really, I can't praise enough what's gone before me.
It has always struck me as a very fine example of an information centre. You have many advantages here. First of all, the building, you look at it, it's unique. It's got a copy of the town hall clock on the roof. You cannot miss it. It becomes a focal point of the town. Secondly, your situation right on the harbour side could not be better. I mean, it's a natural focus, as I say, where people tend to come. You're always busy, as you can hear during this interview. Lots of things are happening in here. And certainly when we've come in, at every time, things are always happening. And I do get that feeling about the area in general, that things are always happening.
They are. If you look on our information boards outside, there are as many posters jostling for attention of what's going on in the winter as there are in the summer. There is something happening. We always say that there is no interest, no hobby, no pastime you could want to pursue that you can't satisfy satisfy in this area. We get about 150,000 visitors a year through our doors, and yes, our position obviously is critical in that. This building was purpose-built by us, designed by us to satisfy the needs of what people were looking for. We own it. We are fairly unique in that. Very few information centres actually own their own building. We have, again, the security of knowing that. It took a lot of money to build it. It took a lot of hard work to raise that. But we have the security of knowing that we should be here for a long time into the future, serving the community, whatever that community is, a local resident, a local business, a day visitor, a holiday maker.
So you're independent, you're self-sustaining, and you are making sustainability the feature that enables you to become independent. In fact, I went to a Green Champions conference again in Taunton, and sustainability was actually seen as the key to financial survival. So if you can run an efficient and sustainable organisation, then financially you will actually be more viable than you might be.
Yes, we analyse everything that we do from the green tourism perspective. We're actually Green Tourism Business Champions for Devon here. We have mentored a number of people and still continue to do so because we feel passionate about it. But we're also conscious that there are a number of things that happen outside the Green Tourism Business Scheme that are equally important, that really come under care for the environment. We are passionate that you have to harness the environmental assets that we have available to us for economic benefit, but you harness them sensitively so that whilst they're delivering economic benefit today, that economic benefit in turn can be used to preserve them for the future, so it's still there for other generations who come after us. We, I suppose, one of our strap lines would be enjoyment through understanding. And we believe if you understand why it's a site of special scientific interest in the estuary, you are less likely to use products that will leach phosphates into it. We are passionate about breaking this expectation of strawberries on Christmas Day. What the farmer is growing in the fields today is what the farmer will have on his stall at the farmer's market on Saturday, and that should be what you have on your plate on Sunday, because that's local produce at its very best.
How many other information centres are there like this?
Well, we're very fortunate in this area in that we have a unique cluster. We belong to the Association of South Hams Information Centres, which are serving the towns of Modbury, Totnes, Salcombe, Dartmouth and Kingsbridge. And we are all financed independently of the main tourism structure. There's slight differences between the way we all operate. Modbury, for example, does rely very heavily on volunteers, but having seen their team of volunteers, they are fantastic, they really are. But Modbury is not in a financial position to be able to operate any other way. And Sue, the manager there, has created this wonderful team around her, and it works very well for Modbury. Totnes work very closely with their town council, and they do get some financial support from them because it is a critical factor that they're delivering council services through the information centre. We are, but we deliver them on a different basis. So we are very special in this area, and I think people are very lucky in this area in that within half an hour's drive you have five of us. I mean, let's be honest, there are parts of the country where you have a major tourism attraction that people come from all over the world to, and the nearest information centre may be 50 miles away in another county because the local authority doesn't fund tourism. So we are absolutely adamant that the future of the South Hams is really in good hands through the members of ASHTIC.
You mentioned that the centres are run differently, but there we are, we're back to localism again. You look at your local circumstances, you look at what will work, and you organise it accordingly.
Ashtig's strength is that we work together collectively, but we are all independent. But we equally support each other. I mean, we're looking at a number of ways in which we can try and make sure that we're not just one sustainable information centre, the five of us are more sustainable together. Our dream is actually that the remaining four towns in the five also achieve Walkers are Welcome status, so that we very soon have an entire Walkers are Welcome area. Literally, you need not step foot out of a Walkers are Welcome area wherever you are in the South Hams, and we're all working to that end. And obviously, as the mentor for this area, you know, that's a very important part of my role.
It seems to me that the principles that you're espousing in the information centre are actually principles that would apply to almost any business. If they took regard of what you were saying, then they might too have a new approach to what they do and a better chance of survival in the years to come.
I would like to hope so. I think you cannot look at anything in isolation. You have to constantly review and monitor your strengths, your weaknesses. You can always improve. I'm a great believer that if you're a small business, you can't stand still, because the moment you stand still, you actually go backwards. But it's how you improve and how you move forward that's important. And because of our unique position in the community, we adopt a totally holistic view that just as we rely on the community to support us, to ensure we survive, this community know that in return we will support them to ensure that they remain vibrant and thriving, and that together Kingsbridge is the place that it deserves to be.
Amanda Bloomer, thank you very much indeed for talking to 10 Radio.
Thank you, I've really enjoyed it.
A great deal of sound advice there, and all sorts of ideas and inspiration from Amanda Bloomer, who's the manager of Kingsbridge Information Centre. I say information centre carefully, because it is a centre for the whole community, and perhaps the way ahead for all tourist information centres. Who knows? I'd love to know how many here in Somerset have run along the same lines. Well, I think I'm going to take a short break from the speech content of the programme and play you some holiday music. Seeing as the programme is in this bank holiday week, a little holiday music? No, not from Somerset. No, not from Devon. It's from Cuba.
Buscando en mi guitarra una tonada de amor. Quise acalarte el muro del corazón. Y aunque lance mi vida por un balcón, siempre en mi canción vive la ilusión de explorar tu piel. Ando como alma en pena matando la soledad, con esperanzas locas de un nuevo amor. Y hasta una noche larga de luna llena, bebé, sigo con mi pena, bebé, sigo con mi pena, bebé. Espera que no acaba de una vez, y yo sigo arrastrando con mi dolor. Y hasta una noche larga la paso en vela, bebé, me la paso en vela, bebé, me la paso en vela, bebé, y extrañándote.
Corazón.
yes, holiday music there from the Caribbean on this bank holiday edition of Somerset Is Go. And it's rather nice to take the programme on holiday, so stand by for even more things of even greater interest.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as Ten Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
Somerset Is Go is the programme that shows you how to beat the recession and to prove that there are people out there beating the recession. Now, it's holiday time. I'm not in Wellington, I'm not in Taunton, I'm actually down in South Devon in the South Hams in Salcombe and at the South Sands Hotel, and the reason that I'm here is that this is a scenario that is bucking the trend. You hear of hotels and restaurants closing, here's one that's just opened. And I'm going to talk to Jeff Gillard, the general manager of the hotel, to find out a little bit more about the project.
Well, essentially, we had another couple of businesses in the area, we watched this building sit here, sort of derelict for several years. I think it was 7 years, in fact, since it last operated as a hotel. And there was a chap that had been developing it, turning it into apartments, who unfortunately went into receivership. It was under offer with the receivers, and we came in and put a bid in. We liked what we saw. We actually believe there is a need for hotels in Salcombe. It's a very popular sailing town, and currently there's only any two other hotels. So we saw an opportunity, and we've ripped the apartments that were here out and turned it back into a hotel.
You do see hotels under severe economic difficulties at the moment. There are many that are closing. Why do you think there was a demand down here?
Well, I essentially think, being beachside, we offer something slightly different. I think also that hotels struggle because they don't keep up with the times. People are expecting a lot more these days for their pound. So in essence, I think you've got to keep running with the times, keep changing and altering your game. I think the hotels that maybe suffer are the hotels that stick with one theme and don't move along with those times. Being beachside helps as well. Certainly we've seen a big trend to the staycation, people staying in the country and really wanting a holiday that offers good value but making the most of what's a truly spectacular place.
Well, as a famous television programme says, it's location, location. We're sitting here in one of the rooms looking straight out over the water, and it's absolutely wonderful. The sun is shining, there are people on the beach. You couldn't get a better place than this, and so that in itself must be a great advantage for where you are. So how do you begin to look at a project like this and say, well, maybe we could do it? What do you have to do to start?
Well, in essence, I think we're very fortunate. We had the backing to do it. We had the wherewithal to do it. We've been in the area for a very long time. We know it very well. The chaps that are involved, the finances of the project, know Salcombe quite well. That they've sort of grown up down here, 20, 30 years worth of holiday. So they themselves know the sort of thing that they would like to stay in being here. So in essence, all we've done is created their vision. They wanted a place that was fairly light-hearted, not too serious, not too stuffy, but yet, a reasonably upmarket hotel, served, fantastic food using local seafood. For some reason, people don't seem to make the most of what we actually have on our doorstep. And obviously, as you can see, we're looking out the window now. You'll see fishing boats going past, and for some reason, people seem to buy fish from elsewhere. It just beggars belief. So we're using local produce, as I'm sure many people do these days. There's a big trend towards local produce. There has been for a great many years now. But in essence, it's selecting the best. So we speak with our fish guys every day. We're asking them what's good. We're not just buying in for the sake of it. Our menu revolves around what our suppliers are suggesting is good. And same with meat. We're working with a couple of local farmers. So we know where our meat's coming from. And, Devon's just fantastic, and we should make the most of what's on our doorstep. So.
I went to a regional conference in Taunton only a few weeks ago on localisation. This is exactly what you're talking about. It's taking the very best locally and using all the resources that you have locally to produce something which is exceptional.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you have to, in these times of economic difficulty, if you can support your neighbour, you know, it comes back to you. Our suppliers, we work very closely with them, and, you know, first weekend and we've already had tables that have been recommended by our suppliers. So I think you have to give as much to the local community. Throughout the build, we've used locals. All our furniture has been made locally. You know, literally everything we possibly can has been sourced within the area. And it's got to be good for the whole place, not just the town, but the, you know, sort of 100-mile proximity. We've had things from all sorts of places, but, you know, all over Devon, really.
Let me go back to the recession. You mentioned earlier that a lot of people were taking their holidays a little bit nearer home these days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we're finding is the biggest growth market for us is actually the long winter weekends. And obviously, I'm not necessarily talking about this hotel because we're just open, but with our other businesses, you know, the winter weekend now is becoming phenomenally popular. People have suddenly clocked onto the fact that London to Devon's, you know, perfectly achievable for a long weekend, or even leaving work on a Friday. And there's a real boom. And also, you know, I think it's down to what you offer. So during the week, midweek in the winter, it's very quiet, but we've come up with all sorts of ideas. We're running sort of shooting weekends, you know, shooting and shopping, so the ladies can go off shopping and the guys can go off shooting. There's golf weekends. It's really just trying to, you know, look around, you see what you've got, and coming up with tailor-made ideas and packages, you know, bringing that in. Again, supporting local trade.
We have to add at this point that you've been open for 2 days, I think.
Yeah, 2 days essentially. We've had some of our beach suites open since last August, so those have been up and running, but very much on self-catering. But main bulk of the hotel, we opened yesterday morning for breakfast. That was our first shift.
Well, the thing that strikes me coming through the door is the great buzz in all departments. Whichever room you go in, there's a buzz, and it feels like it's been here for years.
Yeah, we're very lucky. We've sourced a great team of staff. They're very experienced, and they've gelled instantly, which is fantastic. And I think with something like this that has so much interest, we've had thousands upon thousands of people over the last couple of months coming through the door, talking to us, and the town's buzzing about it. So, you know, I think that then follows through. The staff are very excited to be here, and, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful place to work. So, yeah, it's great. I think there's a buzz all round because of exactly what you're saying. We're bucking the trend. They're used to hotels closing, either that or developing into apartments. We've completely gone the other way. We really believe there is a market for good value hotels. And, you know, development's a bad thing for the town, really.
How important is the internet in this business?
Phenomenally important. You know, I would say increasingly so as well. You know, every year it gets more and more important. This business wouldn't function without the internet. It gives you the ability to, you know, react to your market instantly. I think when you were using publications, sending them out in post and things, you know, you've got great expense to go and change anything, whereas here you can react to your market very quickly. You know, if we're looking quiet for a weekend, we can alter our prices. We're using late rooms, you know, things like this. So you have to be able to have internet access for that, because they have you know, online access to your bedrooms and your availability. Without that, it would be a very quiet place, I think.
Do you have a virtual tour of the hotel on the internet site yet?
We don't yet currently. What we do have at the moment is our holding page. We're just redesigning our website. Our website's actually been with us now for 18 months that we've been building, so it was in need of an update. We obviously couldn't take any pictures of the building until it was finished. We're now in that position, so website's being rebranded, and that's the one of the things we certainly will be looking at. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the building itself. Now, how much modification did it need? I've seen the plans downstairs in the hallway as you come in, and they're pretty impressive. So how big a design job was this?
Well, arguably, it was a massive design for us, but then we decided to alter the actual substance of the building. If we'd actually ran with what we had, it would, you know, it probably would have taken us it would have taken a lot less time and certainly a lot less money. But again, what we had was a very large beachside terrace. Unfortunately, we've had a couple of not great summers, so what we've decided to do was extend out onto that terrace with an area that now has bifolding doors. So in the summer, we can open them all up. But it does mean that if we get wet weather, and indeed in the winter, we can enclose it, and we've got more covers.
You said earlier on it's very important to keep up with the times, to keep up with what is actually going on. What facilities would a guest expect in a hotel of this quality?
Well, I think that's changed an awful lot as well. I think we're maybe coming sort of out of the spa hotel obsession. Initially, that's what we were looking to do. We were going to be a spa hotel. we actually sort of researched the market. We've spoken with friends that have spa hotels, and they say that it's maybe not what people are after these days. We're a beachside hotel, so we've really sort of designed the building around that. So very beach friendly, lots of wooden floors and things that are very easy to clean, not too much on carpets. But essentially in the bedrooms, I think people like a bit of space. If you're staying in a room for, we're not talking commuter hotels where it's possibly a night or two. People do tend to be with us 3-4 nights plus, so you've got to really make it a home from home, and that's what we've tried to do. So hopefully, you know, you walk in and our restaurant has our breakfast bar and things, that you're almost like being in your own kitchen with your friends, and our bedrooms are like that. We're very keen for people to feel like they're at home. In terms of other facilities, I think when you have what we have, beachfront location, the technology and things in the bedrooms isn't so important. You obviously need Wi-Fi, massively important. It will encourage people down for those long weekends. They will leave the office on Friday and work in the hotel bedroom for an afternoon. And equally, everyone can work from their Blackberries and things now. And that's vitally important. But other than that, we're not a hugely technological hotel. We have 12 channels on our TVs. We don't want to encourage people to sit in the bedrooms. We want them to be outside enjoying the area. We've got telephones and nothing more, really.
Well, the essence of coming down to a place like this is that it is a total break from what you're normally used to doing. And you don't have to look very far to find out why. The scenery says it all, and the scenery will do 90% of the work for you.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Again, just going back to the design, the hotel has now been designed so you walk into reception and we've opened the front up. So the second you walk into reception, you just see this panoramic view of the estuary and the caves over the other side, and that's the greatest seller we could have. You know, it's better than anything you can offer in a bedroom. You know, the view really, really sells the hotel. Oh, well, you know, view and location, I think. Certainly for families, which is South Sands all over, we are predominantly families, and we're catering for families as well, which is unusual. Some of our competitors don't really cater for families, which seems strange in a family sailing town. So we've got plenty of family spaces, but yeah, view 100%, it's got to be the best seller.
Let's have a look at your customer base. What distance do people come from to come here?
Well, already, as I sort of said, or as we've been talking about, we've only been open for a couple of days, but we have had couples down from Scotland. I mean, we're getting lots of European visitors. Unfortunately, due to our economy, our pound's not particularly strong, and we've seen a big influx in foreign trade. But we get an awful lot of London-based custom doing the long weekends that come down and sort of sail in the summer. I would say London's probably our best catchment area.
You mentioned before travel time is not really a problem these days. It's possible to get almost anywhere in the southwest within a reasonable time from London. Salcombe is right down at the corner of the South Hams. Are there any difficulties getting here?
No, I mean, it's like any small town that's seasonal. I think in the summer it becomes slightly problematic. In the winter it's quite pleasant. It depends if you're used to driving on narrow lanes, I suppose. I mean, it gets very congested. I think Salcombe's resident population is 10% of the summer population. I think we go up to about 25,000 on a busy August week, and we're just over 2,000 resident population during the winter, so you can imagine the difference there. But, you know, it's not too difficult. It's part of the attraction, I think, driving down these lanes, especially if you're in London and you're used to traffic and things, to actually get down here and be in these pretty lanes with sweeping valleys and fantastic sea views. Yeah, no, it's great.
I'm going to change tack slightly now. What advice would you give to anybody who's thinking of a new business project setting up in these troubled times?
Well, I think you have to assess what you're doing. We spent an awfully long time looking at what we were going to do before we did it. It was chance the location came up, but I think you have to really analyse your competition and look for gaps in the market. The big hotels right down in town and not by a beach, our competition, the Tides Reach, which is a fantastic hotel, but cater for the older generation. So for us, a natural choice is catering for young families and the younger generation. So we've got more of a fun theme. And I would say that, you know, that's the most important thing to do, is look at what you're doing. You can have a fantastic idea, but in the wrong place, it just won't work.
So 2 days on from the official opening and things are already in full swing down here. Where do you see the hotel in 5 years' time?
That's a very good question. I think, again, I have to listen to my own advice and got to move with the times. I don't know where the hotel market will go, and I don't know what will happen to our economy. It's great that we've got people staying in the UK again, and I hope that continues. Essentially, this hotel, we hope, would be a model. We'll work with this one for a few years, hopefully get this one right, and it'll be very nice to go on and do the same again.
It all sounds very exciting. It's a wonderful project. Jeff Gillard, thank you very much indeed for talking to Ten Radio.
Thank you.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as Ten Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
Well, recession there may be, but the new hotel was certainly buzzing as I sat down drinking a coffee in the bar after the interview. Very nice too, with the sea view. May it be an inspiration to us all. Now, finally in the programme, to a very famous company based at Sparkford near Wincanton, Haynes Publications. Their famous motor manuals are in most of our homes, I think, and they now sell worldwide, along with many more varied offerings, such as things like the Book of the Spitfire, the Apollo modules, and even most recently, believe it or not, the Manual for the Chicken. Now, Somerset Chamber of Commerce, in conjunction with Inter Somerset Organisation, ran a conference at the Haynes Motor Museum this Tuesday, and one of the speakers was Jay Haynes, head of Haynes Publications. His views on Somerset will inspire many, and so here's part of his conference address. Now, despite the echoes and the noisy air conditioning and quite difficult recording conditions, it's a message that ought to be heard.
Driving into Sparkford, the village that has been home to Haynes for 36 years, is almost like stepping back in time. But the sleepy settlement belies the size and dynamism of this global operation. So began a recent article in a car magazine about Haynes Publishing. An interesting introduction, which I think encapsulates many people's perception of Somerset. That being stepping back in time, slightly sleepy, very rural, but also introduces the idea that, well, actually, maybe it can also be dynamic and global. Can these two seemingly conflicting views realistically coexist? And I'd like to suggest that they can. Haynes was founded on the 18th of May 1960, so in a few weeks we'll be celebrating our 50th anniversary. The company has grown from a mail-order business that was started by my father when he was at school, to a global business which is the world leader in its niche market. The group is now also a leading provider of information professional mechanics, although unlike the DIY market where we do that via manuals, the professional market is serviced by high-tech, purely online digital information. For those that are familiar with the financials of Haynes Publishing, last year the group generated a pre-tax profit of just over £7 million on a turnover of £35 million. The group is now a truly global concern with offices in Holland, Sweden, Romania, Australia, the United States, both California and Nashville, and of course, Sparkford, Somerset. Haynes has always been in Somerset. Almost from its inception, we've had a close association with Somerset, an association which started back in 1962 when the motorist bookshop and mail order distribution centre was created in Yeovil. Now, when I say distribution centre, I should actually point out it was my grandparents' domestic garage at the back of their home, but nonetheless, that is where our roots began. Since then, we've had various locations all around Somerset, Lower Ogden, Ilchester, Yeovil, West Camel, just down the road, but in 1972 we relocated to Sparkford, and that has been our home ever since. We purchased an old Unigate dairy for an absolute song, because they couldn't understand who would want to run a business from a rural location in Somerset. So although it was purely convenience and family circumstance that brought Haynes Publishing to Somerset, the question that interests me is, what is it that has kept us here over all those years? The importance of recruiting talented, skilled individuals was highlighted to me by the chairman's response whenever a journalist or investor congratulates him on the success of the business. Immediately and without hesitation, he tells them that although the heart of the success of the business is his original idea, It is the hard work and dedication of dedicated and talented people with a common goal and vision that has created that success. As an entrepreneurial, small, flexible business, we need to recruit people who can help us grow the business, who can join our existing team and complement their efforts. We need to find commercially minded creative managers, accounting professionals who can help us in that vision. Especially as the average length of employment at Spartford is 15 years. And I think that our ability to recruit high caliber people is a result of a number of things. Firstly, modern communications enable people to work in a semi-remote manner. Not forcing them to relocate if they don't want to. Maybe they have very strong family ties. But secondly, and at the opposite end of the spectrum, as was touched on by Richard, lots of people do want to relocate once they come down here. There are those that love the idea of bringing up a family in an area where they can either live in a beautiful rural environment or at least have access to a rural environment. And finally, there is a talent that exists within Somerset itself and its immediate surroundings. We've benefited from centres of excellence such as Westlands. In fact, our first ever editorial director came from Westlands and joined us. But there are also many large professional organisations based in places like Taunton and Bristol. And we've just also recruited a qualified accountant who worked for a practice in Taunton. So we have been able to attract talent. Talent has helped us to grow the business. But always talk about having people who are loyal, creative, commercially minded is only valid if you can identify the benefits. I'm reassuring you that if you are thinking of relocating to Somerset, there is a talented, dedicated, creative pool of people here who can help grow your business. Talking holidays, a word of advice. Keep Friday mornings and Monday afternoons free during the summer. Now you may think that by coming to Somerset you'll never see your suppliers, your customers will think you've disappeared off the face of the earth, and your investors will wonder what on earth you're doing. The truth is, during the summer, they're all going down to Cornwall and Devon or the southwest somewhere on holiday, and you become a very convenient stopping off place, either on the way or on the way back, so that they can claim it as a business trip. One of the huge advantages I've discovered is the life-work balance. In summary, Haynes, which has always been based in Somerset, successfully developed a global brand, enjoyed success both in the UK and abroad, particularly in the highly competitive US market, and increasingly in Europe. We have a world-leading team that has helped create a company that after 50 years and during challenging global recession is doing pretty well, and continues to identify and develop commercial opportunities. I hope you'll agree that it's not bad for a company based in a sleepy settlement in rural Somerset, and clearly demonstrates that it is indeed possible to be a dynamic and globally successful company while being located in this tranquil, beautiful county and all the benefits that it offers.
And that was Jay Haynes speaking at the Somerset Business Conference, which was organised by the Somerset Chamber of Commerce, and into Somerset at the Haynes Motor Museum, and that was last Tuesday morning, so hot off the press for you there. And don't forget that Somerset Is Go will be repeated midday on Saturdays, and there's a programme, of course, every Wednesday, 5 until 6, as this one was. Lots of good things still to come. And there's only one thing that remains to do. This has been a holiday edition of Somerset Is Go. I've thoroughly enjoyed doing it. I hope you've enjoyed listening to it, and I hope it's given you lots of good ideas for the future. So let's go out on some more holiday music. This time I'm not going to go to the Caribbean. I'm not even going to go to South Devon. I'm going to go across to the other end of the country for a little thing called Brighton Hike. Sit back and enjoy. We'll see you next week on Somerset Is Go. So bye for now.